Hi, welcome to the UCB Theater podcast for the week of
January 11th, 2010. You are John Frusciante.
And you are Will Hines.
That is accurate.
That is very correct. We're off to a strong start here. I think I say that every week. Do I say we're off to a strong start every week?
I appreciate someone who's consistently optimistic.
Yep, I am. To a fault.
So what do we got going on at the theater this week? That's what we do in this podcast. We talk about what's going on at the UCB Theater.
Mm-hmm.
We have interviews with people. And today we're talking to Andre Vermeulen. Well, I just garbled her last name.
Andre Vermeulen.
Yeah. It's such a great last name. And I garble it pretty often.
Yeah. Andre Vermeulen is here. She has a new show, French Toast, that debuts this week at the theater. It's a solo show.
So we're going to talk to her and her director, Jim Santangeli.
That's right. We're going to yak it up with them.
And we're also going to talk about what's going on at the theater this week.
Yes. So we have a bunch of exciting things this week at the theater. Wednesday, January 13th, we have Ryan Paulson in I'm Uncomfortable. I believe it's his third time at the UCB Theater. And Ryan is great. He's hilarious. His show is hilarious. The story of his show is that he was raised very religiously.
Yeah.
He had never, you know, had sex or touched himself or done anything like that. He was very bottled up and religious.
Yeah.
And in this show, he discusses his move to New York and his sudden explosion
of life experience.
That's right, and of self-discovery and all that stuff.
Wow. I'm impressed that he was able to have experience. When I came to New York, I didn't do anything for 2 years. I didn't make any friends. I just, like, watched a million movies. But good for him. I'm glad that he had an interesting... that's awesome.
You can live your life through him.
Great.
If you want. You can go there and retroactively experience your life.
I love the title.
Yeah, I'm Uncomfortable. That's Wednesday the 13th at 8 o'clock.
Cool.
Thursday the 14th at 7. I really want to talk about this, and I know you're going to really want to talk about this.
Oh, great. What is it?
The Get Psyched.
Oh, I'm in the show. Right. yeah, that's right.
Yeah, why don't you talk to us about Get Psyched, the book live.
Well, this is Dr. Lanny Latham, a life coach. Well, okay, I'm just going to – it's a character. Rob Latham does a character called Dr. Lanny Latham,
mm-hmm.
who is a fake – No, not a well. Okay, he's a self-help coach who is deluded into thinking he's amazing, but he's not amazing. He's a mess, but he thinks he's great. And his whole philosophy is to tell everyone to get psyched a million times. And Rob is hilarious. The character's hilarious. He's been doing this guy for a couple years.
Mm-hmm.
And sometime last year, I honestly do not remember how it started, but Rob and I started writing a book that would be Lanny Latham's like self-help book. Like most of these guys have like a book that go with their philosophy.
Right.
So But like, to everyone's surprise, most of all our own, we finished it and actually got it formatted and we're publishing it. Like, it's a real tangible book that you can buy. We got Damian Chadwick, who is a writer here at the theater, to format it. It looks great.
Yeah, it looks amazing.
And we are self-publishing it through Lulu.com, and we have copies of it, and we're going to be selling it at the show. We're excited about it. It's for sale through his website, getpsyched.biz. So this is the book release show where we're going to have a bunch of people reading segments from the book.
Like, great.
Lanny will be there shouting excitedly and having people reading different things in the book. And it's crazy. And we have a lot of people who are people that we photographed to be in the book as different characters in Dr. Lanny's life will be there reading their segments.
And it's a hilarious – first of all, it's a hilarious character. You're right. Rob is a ridiculous, hilarious person.
Yeah.
And I remember his show, Get Psyched, where this character was shown off. It ran for a while at the theater.
Yeah.
Always a great show.
I like seeing Rob. I mean, I'll see Rob around town. I mean, he performs at the UCB Theater primarily, but I'll see him at different stand-up shows around town where he'll get booked as Dr. Lanny Latham and just come on stage and do like his 7 steps of getting psyched. He's also been hired twice for real. Like 2 different times he's been hired as a real like seminar speaker.
Wow, I didn't know that.
Yeah, twice he's gone to businesses and given his Get Psyched seminar as a real thing.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Well, I hope this book and the show lead to that happening a bunch of times.
That would be the best. They have them filmed. The Bobby Chicago guys, the video group, filmed him doing it. And they're also involved in Andre's show.
Mm-hmm.
So
they filmed him doing the corporate seminar?
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah.
So this is the book reading of the show, and you'll have your opportunity to buy the book and to see Lanny Lathan in person and probably get your life changed.
Your life will instantly be made a million times better. That's what Lanny promises.
Every morning I do quick hands. It's the first thing that I do when I wake up in the morning.
Quick hands is the main exercise that Lanny recommends, which is just rubbing your hands together quickly in the air and saying quick hands, but it's supposed to do wonders.
It seems like just that, but it is so much more than just that.
So much more, right.
So that's Thursday the 14th at 7 o'clock.
Yes.
Friday the 15th at 8 o'clock, we have the debut of Shannon O'Neill's show, Prison Freaks, which you directed, as a matter of fact.
Yeah, man, I'm all over this.
You're all over this week.
Good heavens. Shannon's show is great.
It's amazing.
It is hilarious and really bizarre. And Shannon's been performing at the theater for a long time and is a popular and great performer. And this show is very much her weird and triumphant personality coming through, in that it's just a bunch of... Well, the show is the talent show at the Charlie Sheen prison for the criminally retarded and insane. So these are like really strange prisoners who are doing their talents for a talent show, and Shannon, of course, performs all the characters. And they're all really strange and bizarre, and a juxtaposition of sort of like endearing and violent people.
Yeah.
And then Matt Mayer did all these graphics for the show that go on the screen in between her characters, and they look beautiful.
Yeah, they do.
So Shannon's worked her butt off on the show, and it's really impressive, I think.
Yeah, it's a true triumph of, and you hinted at this, of somebody's personality coming out, somebody being able to write to their personality.
Yeah, I think so.
It's exactly what you want to see when you go see a comedy show. Like it feels like it comes from a mature... comedic point of view.
Yeah, you feel like you kind of know what Shannon thinks is funny. Like, you know her in the way like that a good comedy show should do. So
yeah, absolutely. So it's well worth seeing, and that's January the 15th at 8 o'clock. That's the debut of the run of that show.
Cool.
And then Saturday, something I'm particularly excited about is the return of the Dirtiest Sketch in New York contest.
Yeah.
The Dirtiest Sketch Show has a legacy of having left us with some of the
most
more...
disturbing and terrible things.
That's
ever.
Right. Yeah.
This was started with, didn't Owen Burke and Jackie Clark start this way
I
back
think
in the
so,
day?
I'm
almost positive that it was Owen posting on all these message boards just the word dirty all over the place, telling people to submit their dirty sketches.
Mm-hmm.
And Jackie was involved, if not at the beginning, very early on.
Yeah. And then Hot Sauce took it over.
Right.
And then it was Hot Sauce and Jackie Clark.
Right.
And
then it kind of went away for a while.
Because Ben Schwartz and Adam Pally moved to Los Angeles.
Right.
They were two of the three members
of
Hot Sauce.
So this is the return of Dirtiest Sketch.
That's right. So it's Gil Ozeri from Hot Sauce, and myself and John Flynn are now hosting Dirtiest Sketch.
And is it really that, like, how does it work? How do you get in the show?
The way it works is you submit to... We've had a bunch of people submit their sketches. We just put out a call saying, submit your filthy, dirty sketches.
And is it just like, keep it short and keep it dirty?
Yeah.
Is it sort of like 3 minutes and be filthy?
Yep, 3 to 5 minutes and just make it the most filthy thing that you can make. And previous shows have included... Well, the most legendary, let's just get it out of the way right now, is somebody... it was the Whalers, the Calgary Whalers, I believe is the name of their group.
Okay.
They went down to Chinatown and bought a raw chicken.
Oh, my God.
And the sketch consisted of one of the members of the group fucking a raw chicken to pieces.
Really?
On stage. Yeah.
Oh, man.
That's the most legendary story from Dirtiest Sketch. But we've had, you know, people sticking peanut butter up their ass.
I still think the most legendary is Brett Gelman.
Yes.
Naked in blackface, supposedly, you know... doing a performance that was supposed to have taken place on September 10th, 2001.
Yes.
Where a man in blackface naked is singing Candyman and then has a premonition of the attacks on the Twin Towers.
Yes.
And so he's singing Candyman in blackface naked and then is possessed by some demon and predicts the attack on the Twin Towers, then goes back to singing Candyman. That's also pretty legendary.
Yeah, that's right. I forgot about that one.
Yeah.
So,
and didn't somebody also shove peanut butter up their ass?
Somebody shoved peanut butter up their ass,
And there's been multiple, like, pooping and...
I believe that...
Or if not real pooping, like, pretty realistically simulated pooping, and then occasionally a little bit of real pooping.
Hasn't I believe so. I saw a group, spit into another member of the group's buttholes once.
Really?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh, man.
I believe, wasn't it, didn't Gemberling put a plunger up Curtis Gwynn's ass?
Oh, that's right.
One year, it was
I think it was the reverse. I think Gemberling was volunteering to experience...
Oh, that's right.
An ass rape, because there were references to it in improv recently, and then people were like, well, it's not sensitive to act lighthearted about this thing that's a horrible act. And he was like, well, I will experience the horrible act and therefore have the right to make jokes about it.
Yeah.
And then he experienced it and is traumatized on stage and vows to never joke about it. Isn't that how that went down?
I think so. I didn't see it. I just heard about it.
Yeah. This show is – I mean, the theater is already like sort of known for going blue and like doing like edgy and sort of like – crazy things, and this show is daring people to push that boundary.
This show is a celebration of that, where most of the time it's like, hey, don't do that, you know, very puritanical.
Yeah. When is the show happening?
Saturday the 16th at midnight.
So you got Ryan Paulson, here's the theater as this week. Ryan Paulson had a life of repression, and is talking about how that affected him and how that influenced his experiences when he moved to New York. And then on Saturday you're having... basically, a complete debaucherous descent into weirdness.
Yeah, that's right.
All right.
So hopefully we've gotten a submission from somebody who has never masturbated before, who is willing to do it for the first time in
shouting,
sketch form.
I'm uncomfortable. I'm uncomfortable.
Yeah. Yeah. So those things are all happening this week at the theater.
Sounds great.
And also this week is Andre Vermeulen's French Toast, which debuts on Thursday the 14th. She's going to come back in a couple of minutes, and we're going to talk to her about the show.
Cool.
So we will see you then. Stay tuned. Hi, welcome back to the UCB Theater podcast. We're here with Andre Vermeulen.
Hi.
From her show French Toast, which debuts this week at the UCB Theater. And we also have the director of the show, Jim Santangeli, here.
Oh, I was wondering. I was wondering if you were here. I interrupted you. I'm sorry.
Si.
Spanish.
So it's also Italian.
Oh.
Yeah.
So, Dre, your show's called French Toast. Why don't you tell us a little about the show, what's it about, et cetera?
Well, the story of the show, I'm applying for the Greatest French Person in the World Award. and through applying for that award, I find out that I may actually be Belgian. And I go on this quest to find the truth about my family. And this is based on a real life story where my mother's American, my father's French, and my dad, my whole life, was really intent on me not being Americanized and was very, very passionate about me being proud of being French. And, you know, everything around me was French, French, French. And then when I was like 20 years old, I went to get my dual citizenship, and my dad threw the biggest shit fit, like so angry and making no sense. Just like, why would you want to do that? It's a stupid thing. You have a two passports. You don't know which one to use? And I'm like, Dad, that's not a good argument.
So it's awesome. True. I was there.
Jim is that right?
Yeah, I was there when that happened. That's why. It was awful. It was such
but
a fight.
I found out that he was just trying to get me not to go through with it, because I would have had to go to the Belgian consulate, and then his big secret would have been revealed.
So it's really important to him that you're not Belgian. Like, that's such a drag to be thought of as Belgian. That sounds so exotic to me.
No, mm-hmm. Belgium is like the New Jersey of Europe.
Love it.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
as a New Jersey native, I can I can identify with that.
And I was born in New Jersey. And let me say this for New Jersey and for Belgium. In reality...
it's never been said before.
Yeah.
Let me say this for New Jersey.
Let me say this
Belgium.
One thing.
Yeah.
New Jersey has, as you know, John, some of the most beautiful places probably in America and some of the most expensive zip codes. Not everyone knows that. But it's still the butt of all American jokes,
yep.
I think.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
Still.
And Belgium, the most wonderful beer, food.
Okay.
It was bombed a lot, so some of the architecture is ruined.
But
everything was.
Yeah, let's not single them out.
Yeah.
Right.
It's not their fault.
Do you think part of it is because
their fault? They bombed themselves.
Yeah.
Do you think part of it is because of Belgian Shore? That reality show?
Oh, yeah.
terrible.
Schnucko and... does that make sense? Was it Schnucky?
Yeah.
And the situation tag?
I can't.
So, how did this show come about? Like, what was the... aside from having the story there, were you always kind of thinking about, I want to do a show based on this story, or what was the impetus for it?
Well, when I was trying to think of possible stories to make a show out of, I was having a powwow with my manager, Cara Welker, yo, shout out.
In the house.
She's here.
She's not here.
She's sitting in the corner.
She's in
right
the
now.
House. She's right here.
Yeah.
Oh, she is. Weird. Weird. And, you know, we're just going over things that have happened to me that could possibly be funny. And I was like, oh, well, there's that thing where I thought I was French my whole life and I'm actually Belgian. She's like, that's really weird. You should write about that.
It is really weird. Does your dad really have that pronounced an accent? I mean, does he have, like,
yeah,
a pronounced
well,
French accent?
My dad had the most ridiculous accent. My dad passed away. You'll find that out
in
the show.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Which actually...
I
am the worst conversation.
Oh, my God.
No, I've got, like, a divining rod for horrible topics.
No, but if you come and see the show, you'll see that his presence is very dominant throughout the show. But in the story, it made it even more impossible, because if someone has died, it's really hard to ask them, like, hey,
why did you do this?
Me
why
I
was this
French
so...
my whole life?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I was writing about that. I forgot what the original question was.
You're answering it. I was just asking what the process was for creating the show.
But I will say, I don't think I would have been able to write it any sooner than now, because it's been about like 3 years, and I get really grumpy before each show and like the week of the show, and I'm like, what is wrong with me? This is a comedy.
Right.
But at the core of it is an issue that actually really bothers me. So like, poor Jim, I'm always like very grumpy.
Well, the issue bothers me too. So I mean,
yeah.
You were very close to the family. It sounds
like I said,
you were
I was
there
when like I met Dre when we were six. I think
yeah.
it was. So I was there for a lot of this.
Yeah,
is that
That's
true?
Why I'm directing this, because Dre and I grew up together a little bit in New Jersey.
Is that really true?
Hmm?
Is that true or not true?
He already forgot what he said.
Yeah, well.
This is the trouble with interviewing comedians, is I never know...
I don't know either.
...which parts of their life stories are made up as jokes.
This is true.
I
went to the same elementary school. We went to Burbank
Elementary.
I'll tell
you this. One of us has told complete truth thus far, and one of us has not. You can guess who.
Oh, so Jim is making stuff up? Maybe I shouldn't be part of this podcast. I cannot tell.
You know what? I think we're both going to leave. Well, that does bring me to asking you, Jim, how you got involved in the show and what your approach to...
Yeah, what are you doing here?
I know!
I completely agree.
Yeah, start pulling your weight on this podcast or get out of here.
Fuck off! No, Dre and I are on a mod team together, and she called me and asked me to do it. That's pretty much it. And I feel like...
I probably called you and left a long, rambling voicemail first.
She did. It was like a long message. And honestly, I'll be honest, it sounded like a really, really bad idea. But I told him, I was like, send it to me, I'll read it, and then like, you know, because you don't want somebody who's attached to it doesn't like it,
right, you want your director to be like a cheerleader,
excited
for,
yeah, 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 yeah,
definitely.
I remember him reading it and calling me back and being like, I like it, it's really fucking weird, can I swear?
Yeah.
Oh yeah, man. This is like serious.
Mm-hmm.
It is good, it's very good, it's very weird, but like I like you know, I like things that are like funny, but also kind of sad.
Right.
Dark, you know?
It's definitely an imaginative, dark comedy.
Well, I was walking, I said this before, I was walking through, I was at the offices yesterday, was it?
Yeah.
Or 2 days ago, and Dre had a toy cobra tied
so
to her
excited.
Ankle with a fish. Yeah, she just
was
like Will, come here, look at this, come here. Out of nowhere,
rig.
And I was like, what? And then down by her feet, she has a toy cobra tied to her ankle with fishing line. She's like, watch me drag it along. And I had no context, still have no context.
I feel like most of the conversations I've had with Dre leading up, like throughout this process, there's been so much like, she'll pitch me and I like her new idea, and I feel like I spend a good minute and a half silent.
Yeah.
Because I'm just sitting on the other phone thinking like, yeah, can I figure, like, does it make sense, and how do I tell her she's insane? You know, like, a toy cobra. And then I see her do it, and it's always funny and, like, adorable or something. It makes
It was funny when I saw you yesterday, Dre, but I just didn't know what it was about, and still don't know, and we'll never know.
Well, I have seen it, and it's great.
Okay, good.
And you should definitely see it.
I got it, yeah, I got to get my act together.
Yeah, really, get it together. Come on, what
are
you
doing? Where is
it playing? Have you heard of the UCB Theater?
Nope.
Are you familiar with it? Well,
I'm
you should check it out.
Okay.
Jim, is this your first directing foray? Is this the first thing you've directed?
Yeah.
Did you enjoy it?
I did. Well, Dre did everything. I mean, like, she pretty much just had the whole thing ran out. I think it was just...
Well, I chose Jim because he knows me very well. And I will say that sometimes it bothers me when people are like, you're so weird, or that's weird, instead of like, it's imaginative. There's, you know what's interesting?
Yeah, weird can be like a pejorative term, or it can be like a cool thing.
Yeah, if I were like 5 years old, and I said and did the things that I do now, you would be like, what a funny kid.
Right.
But since I do them now...
It's ageist, is what it is.
You're like, oh, you're weird.
But really, though, I remember being in elementary school and doing this similar things to what I do now, and other kids saying, you're weird. So I feel like it's a thing, like, we never leave the playground with that point of view.
Yeah. But I chose Jim because I was like, Jim will not be like, you're weird. And if he does say it, he'll do it in his big, hearty laugh. That's approving. Like,
no, but I mean, she's, I don't know.
And he knows
me
well.
She's just funny. Yeah.
Everybody's strange. But, you want, when you're working creatively, you want someone who appreciates the strength of your own individual eccentricity, for sure.
He's got a good eye, and he's worked with me for, like, what, 30 years now doing sketches?
30? Yeah.
30 years 30 now years. Doing
Yeah, 30 years on a
Since
Mon
elementary school.
So he knows what to push when I'm not...
Well, you've been on two great Mon teams. You're on Gramps now, and you guys are on 27 Kidneys. Both both great teams who did a lot of great shows.
In fact, we have a show tonight.
No, we don't.
Yeah,
yes,
you do.
Yeah, tonight. You do. Yeah, that's right.
I forgot it's Monday.
That's right. We can
you can see
your
Gramps tonight at, I believe, 8 o'clock.
8 p.m., yeah.
9:30.
Wait, no, 9:30.
Oh, it's over the second 9:30. Slot, so we're at 9:30.
Yeah, and I'll be hosting all of Mod Night.
And Will directed this.
Yeah, I directed Gramps.
So it comes full circle.
And you can see the team that I'm on, Gorilla Gorilla, at 8 o'clock. So
you don't have to,
see all of us.
You may want to get dinner beforehand.
You should get dinner early. 8 o'clock is too late to eat because you'll store a lot of carbs. You'll get fat. You should eat early. Early in the evening and then see Gorilla
John,
Gorilla.
I'd love for people to go see Gorilla Gorilla, but I do believe that the digestive system requires an earlier dinner. So go at 7:30, get some tapas.
Yeah, walk into that theater like at 10 o'clock and see Gramps and...
Will, you're not helping because we're on at 9:30.
What are you trying to say?
You said 10 o'clock.
Where is this playing?
UCB.
We actually are on at 10 o'clock.
Dre, tell me about... what's your background comedically? Where did you come from before you got to UCB?
Yeah, interestingly enough, I went, I thought I was going to be a dramatic actor with never
What? Oh my God. Imagine
she went to Juilliard with a cobra tied around her ankle. Did a monologue from Henry V. And...
Well, we're glad.
When I was finishing high school, I actually did do this whole intensive thing at Juilliard, and I was doing all this Shakespeare, and then I went to Marymount Manhattan College, and I was just doing straight theater, and I had a minor in musical theater, which was basically just dancing nonstop, which you'll see in my show. I do the can-can.
Ooh,
she does. Yeah.
It's French.
Yeah.
It's French.
Can I answer that question?
Yes.
I didn't do Juilliard, but I did do Julie Hard.
Oh my God.
Come see your show.
No, but yeah.
You should be sitting next to me because Will hates those kind of jokes,
God,
but
John
I love them.
The worst puns.
Oh, man.
Such enthusiasm.
Is that a pun?
Nope.
No.
But yeah, at the end of my training, we did this one comedic scene, and my advisor like pulled me over in the corner, and she's like, "You're so funny. You should go do a comedy."
Wow.
And at that point, I was just mad because that was $70,000 later, and you're telling me to go pay
and do
more comedy. But she said, you know, go take classes at UCB, and then I did, and then I got sucked into the vortex, and then I don't know if you know anything about vortexes, but you can't get out.
You can't escape them.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That's right.
Oh, I know it all too well.
Yeah.
They're called ho-hos.
Yeah.
So.
It's not really accurate, but
it's all good.
It doesn't matter.
It I think you're saying that your
My
vortex
is
ho-hos.
That's what I mean.
So you eat one ho-ho, and then...
And that's it!
So go see Dre's show.
One more thing about the show. I just want to mention Bobby Chicago, because they did some great videos.
Oh, yeah, those guys are great.
Yeah, lovely Pete Schultz and Brandon Bassam.
Their stuff's hilarious.
Working tirelessly into the night, editing my videos.
They're hilarious, and they are amazingly, like, diligent and productive.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And they're really nice guys, too. Super
nice. What
is
that? There's obviously a catch.
I have no idea.
We'll figure out what it is later.
They're also pretty well-dressed.
What's their angle?
Yeah.
They're not both well-dressed. Pete's well-dressed.
Pete's
Brandon
well-dressed.
Dresses like a guy who works at a video store.
Oh.
Lucky for him.
Yeah.
And,
I know, Brandon. I feel like I could say that.
Thomas Middleditch is in one of the videos.
Here's
with you.
A little secret.
Mm-hmm.
Thomas Middleditch is actually every French person you hear in the show.
Oh, really?
Because he does such a good French accent. And when I wrote the video with this ridiculous Frenchman, I knew that he would understand what I was trying to do without having to overexplain it because, well, we're dating. But anyway,
right.
We've been to Europe.
You heard it here, ladies and gentlemen. TMZ.
Drama.
Wow, yeah. But he understands French people. We've been to Europe. We've been snubbed by French people. So he did that character wonderfully, and he does a good accent. So he's actually the voice of my dad as well. We just morphed it, which it almost sounds like Andre the Giant, I think. Because Thomas is a kind of a tenor.
Who was Belgian.
So we had to morph. We had to morph the marfmilet in a pen of her.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, there she goes. Yeah. Wow. I'd also like to thank the audio technician, Jim
Santangelo. Did all of my audio. He did.
Jim is a powerhouse.
Right now we're recording this on a GarageBand, and I am beyond good with GarageBand.
Your legacy with GarageBand is well known.
If you guys need a little help,
gotta be great.
Over,
yeah. I'm doing it right now, and I have no idea what I'm doing.
There's a massive imaginary fight scene at the end of my show that Jim had to time out perfectly. Right before we came into this interview, he was mad at me because I told him the sword was late. There's a
there's an
imaginary
sword. A little fight, a little tiff.
Then he listens to it and he's like, it's late.
Any creative partnership has to
Yeah.
Are we going too long, John?
No, we're long. Yeah, well, let's wrap it up.
I got things to do.
Did someone say Obama?
Nope.
Nobody said
because
that.
Because we have a view about him.
I'm sure you do. We'll talk about it off the air. So thank you so much, Andre and Jim, for coming in. You can see Andre Vermeulen in French Toast Thursday, January 14th. That's this Thursday at 8 o'clock. You can also see it Thursday the 21st at 8 o'clock at the UCB Theater.
Cool. Yeah. Let's do this for real now.
All right.
Yep.
Should we start over?
Are we recording now?
Yeah, let's start over.
Okay, let's do this.
Okay, thanks a lot for coming in.
Thanks, guys.
Bye.
We'll be right back.
Okay, so we're back. So this is the third part of our podcast where traditionally now John and I will engage in some sort of artsy-fartsy discussion about the improv scene or sketch comedy scene and things therein. And I'd like to say at the top that we have little authority to espouse our opinions other than just having been around forever. Well, I mean, no authority, but who are we? I want to say that we're aware of our own arrogance.
We have experience, and that's about it. And we've created this podcast as a way to give ourselves the authority.
This is the payment for us in order to sit around and just spit our opinions
out
with no one around to interrupt us but each other.
That's right. That's really all this is.
Because we were together in an office at the UCB offices, and we would sit around and talk about things, and we're like, well, we need to give people access to this.
Yeah, these conversations are too good
to
fall by the wayside. It's really, it's like writing an improv scene. It's like, well, that clearly has to become a sketch that other people can see.
So, like, we are interested in these discussions and happy to do them, but I feel it's important to give a qualifier at the top that
that's
it's just a discussion and, you know, it's not anybody's official view.
That's right.
Okay, so that started.
Okay, so
Del
now let's
Close
get into the fun
part. BS and improv is stupid.
Yeah, I don't understand any of this. Yes, what?
Okay.
Okay.
So what are we really talking about today? Our topic, so today we're going to be talking about in improv the idea of talent versus passion, which I guess like which is more important, which matters more. How should you measure which is going to determine your success?
And how do those things affect your performance?
Yeah,
like if you are on stage or if you go to see a group on stage and they are not doing well, is it because they just showed up to the show and just said, "I'm phoning it in. We don't care. We're just screwing around."
Lack of passion.
Yeah,
or is it because they're just not good?
Right.
Well, I'll say I think in the long run, passion wins out over talent. I'm gonna say I'll say that matters more in the long run because I've been, you know, I've seen a lot of hilarious and amazing people over the years. Some people who just have instant charisma on stage and are just like super fast thinkers and a great comedic sense. But if they don't care, they're gonna go away. They're just not around.
Sure,
they could win it all easily. But if they're not willing to, like, go to a rehearsal, get a note, go see somebody else's show, I mean, I'm sure it applies to anything, but, like, they're gone. And then it's the people that you don't notice at first who are okay and but love it and are just, like, filled with passion for it. I think that they are the ones who end up sticking around. They work at it, and they're the ones who do it.
Yeah, you absolutely have to with something like this. Like you said, it's like with any other art form. You have to be able to be willing to persevere and to keep running and to get knocked down and get back up again and to, like you said, take notes and to really endure the kind of difficult parts of mastering, you know, this art or any kind of art. You have to be able to be willing to get better and to go to great lengths to get better as an improviser, as a writer, as a comic in general, in order to really succeed and achieve things. And if you are somebody who is talented but you're a jerk, you know, or if you're talented or you feel entitled, you won't last very long. And also, if you're somebody who is passionate and somebody who's talented, you're not going to go to a show with the idea of just like, who cares?
Yeah.
You know, like it kind of harkens back to the conversation we had last week about, I think we had this conversation last week about Harold Teams doing shows on nights that are not Harold Night, where they just want to kind of blow off steam.
And I was saying that's okay because they've deliberately chosen that as their goal for the night.
Right.
I was saying like it's not their standard operating procedure, but they're giving themselves a break from pressure they feel at other times.
But if you have a show that you've scheduled and your group is doing and you go there and you don't, you know, give it your all and you don't really try.
Yeah.
It's probably more lack of talent than it is lack of. It's probably more lack of the ability to kind of summon that performance.
Like you're not giving a crap because that's the only thing you're able to do.
I mean, maybe you are. What I'm saying is that you. It's not that you don't give a crap.
Right.
It's just that you don't have that kind of mindset.
Oh, from the audience's perspective, you may be like, these people don't give a crap. But really what it is they don't have the tools yet to be able to deliver.
Yes, that's what I mean. Yeah.
And so it's unfair to make that kind of character assessment about what's going on in their heads.
Yes. Yeah, that's what I mean.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's hard from the audience point of view to know what's – I mean, if a show isn't working and you're in the audience will make assumptions over why. They're like, oh, they got to let that funny person say more, or they should do this, or their problem is – but you have no idea what it could be. It could be a great group having a bad night, or maybe they're trying something new that they're bad at, or maybe they're just young.
Yeah.
This is just part of their growing experience, and you caught somebody, you know, moving their way up.
That's true.
The experience.
From an audience of people who are uninitiated, who have just shown up to someplace to the theater to see a show, they're not going to know, and they're not really going to be able to make those judgments.
But I think, the hard part is when you're at the stage where you're new and you're green, and you really want to be good at it, but you can feel that you're not really, you know, it's not easy yet. Like you're not super comfortable on stage yet. It's hard for you to think of things. You're moving more slowly than you wish you could, and you do shows where people see you be not that great.
Yeah,
it's tough.
Yeah, and that's why you have to have that passion to persevere, because you are going to do those things.
Or obliviousness. Just like an ignorance that, like, I mean, to some degree, ignorant. I mean, if you're completely ignorant of your shortcomings, you're not going to last long. But I've always been kind of envious of people who are lacking a little introspection. Not completely. Like, you need to have good introspection to be a good comedian or artist.
Right.
But some people are just like, they seem to shake it off easier.
Oh,
and they seem to remember their own successes better. I'm weirdly thinking of people who are able to Twitter all the time. I'm almost like impressed. I'm like, wow, I mean, maybe people are on my Twitter account and thinking, no, Will, you Twitter too much and it's already a blathering stream. But I mean, like, I'll see people who are just very prolific in whatever they choose to be, whether it's Twitter or sketch writing or something. I'm like, I'm impressed that you can just keep it going.
Yeah.
To a certain degree. Like, that's, you get better.
Yeah, that you just have the ability to just keep going, keep doing, and just keep, like, to immediately know what you think is funny and what you think worked and kind of go along those lines rather than getting off stage from whatever you've just done and doing what I normally do, which is like a good 1 to 6 hours of
self-flagellation,
like grunting and flagellation.
Yeah.
And like, why did that?
That's standard. I think all improvisers walk off stage and immediately begin a ritual of self-punishment.
Yeah.
I think that's – and you I know the look of an improv team when they walk off stage. You're looking down at your feet and shaking your head and being like, ugh. I've almost never seen a team walk off stage and be like, yeah, we did it.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess I do see that sometimes. But
I think that does happen with the better teams that are
– I don't know. I've been on good teams. Like, it's pretty standard to like you are aware more than anybody of what you missed. Because you could feel it.
You know, and you've been around for long enough to see your teammates and yourself hit certain peaks. That's really what does it. You'll hit a great scene in class or on a show, and that, and in a weird way, that haunts you.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Like, to get there again is like, I know this can be better, what I'm doing right now.
Yeah.
That's hard to shake.
Yeah, I feel like that is something that, you know, I've been on groups and teams in the past that have been, you know, I was on a team for a long time, independent of UCB, that was... We performed together all the time.
Right.
We were together as people all the time. And like, yeah, that was a very special kind of thing that,
right,
I think spoiled me in terms of
that's how rare.
I approach improvisation. And so I find myself comparing my own personal performance and my team dynamics to that.
You have to it's rare to find a group who's on the same page at the same time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That doesn't happen very much. Now, let me disagree with everything we've just said.
Sure.
Or did you have a point you wanted to
no,
make?
No, no.
Okay.
I was trying to steer the conversation back to passion versus talent, okay, so hopefully you're going to do
that's
that.
That's what I'm going to do. Talent. Here's the thing, though. Like, talent does matter. Like, I mean, obviously. But, like, I remember doing practice groups. I mean, there are people who are just powerful on stage. They have, like, just something, a charisma, or they're just funny, or they have the ability to create funny moments, even if they're new and unseasoned improvisers or new and unseasoned sketch writers, and the audience rewards them with like laughter and a reaction, and they can energize a show. And if you're in a group, and it's hard to not like put everything around that person. I guess what I'm saying is, let's say somebody has a talent and no passion,
right?
But they want to be in a practice group or something. They want to do in a show, and they. You know, infuriating people who are working harder, get on stage, not having seen as many shows, not having taken as many classes, and just get a better reaction from the audience.
Right.
I mean, I certainly remember feeling like that when I was coming up through classes. Like, it's frustrating to watch.
Mm-hmm.
What do you do if you're working with somebody like that? Like, what kind of trade-offs can you do? Let's say you have a chance to work with someone who's amazingly talented but isn't giving a shit, but it might make your show better. What do you do? How much are you willing to put up with?
It depends on how that manifests itself. If it manifests itself as somebody who...
I'll give you one.
Okay, go ahead.
Let's say you're in a practice group. Uh-huh. I'm not thinking of a specific person, honestly. I'm giving you a hypothetical.
Sure.
Let's say you're in a practice group. You are a student. This practice group is a performance group, and it's your main performance outlet.
Mm-hmm.
You got six people. Most of them show up all the time. But there's a seventh person who is generally more powerful on stage than everybody, but this person misses rehearsal most of the time.
That's exactly the example I was just about to give.
But they seem to make the shows. They like doing shows. So whenever your group is trying to work on something, like maybe learn a form that you're bad at, or try something new, or make a conscious decision to maybe start scenes slowly or something. But then this person wasn't at that practice.
Right.
And they nod. They're a nice person. They're not a jerk of a person. So before the show, you're like, oh, we're trying to start scenes slowly. Okay, yeah, got it. Then you walk out on stage. They're not starting scenes slowly. They're doing things that they always do. But the audience loves it, and your show is probably going over better because of it.
I would not want to work with that person personally.
Yeah.
I would see it as I would be looking more towards what the group objective is rather than like, well, at least we have this hilarious person here.
Okay.
You know, because I've had that situation happen in all forms of, you know, you see that everywhere. I would rather work with somebody who,
of course,
is talented and hilarious and also is on board with what I'm trying to do or what the group is trying to do rather than somebody who is just hilarious and can just do it.
Now let me scale the example back a little bit. Let's say the person does go to rehearsal all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Same person.
Right.
And is genuinely into improv and is a friend of yours, like somebody you met in classes, and this is a nice person,
right?
But they're just not disciplined on stage. Like, they're at the rehearsal, they heard the coach, they like the coach, they agree with the notes, but they get on stage, they just don't do it. They they can't resist the pressure to make every moment fun for the sake of some larger thing,
and those things that they do then derail the scenes or derail the pieces?
They go over well in the short term. Let's say you're trying to do mono scenes.
Right.
And part of the success of a mono scene is like creating some realistic characters up top, let's say. That's what you've decided as a group.
Okay.
And the coach has said, you guys need to start more grounded. You're starting too crazy and everything collapses in on itself. This person walks out, and the mono scene begins in a library. This person walks out as the Knight of St. George having just slayed a dragon, and the audience loves it.
Uh-huh.
And he's able to like speak in medieval terms and he's a charismatic, confident person, and the scene in the short term is more fun. Mm-hmm. But you know, sitting there like, well, we're not going to be able to do what we were supposed to do today.
Right.
But and then after the show, this person immediately is like, I'm sorry, yeah, I know, I did it. Oh, you know, I got to watch it. Because I think that's a harder case.
That is definitely a harder case. But does that happen, or is it just like a person, that same person from the example that you just cited, gets it and nods their heads in practice and seems to get it and everything, but then goes on stage and just derails the piece that you're trying to work
on? I guess I'm saying, yeah, they derail it.
So if that, and that is what I'm talking about. I think that is like what I had in mind when we started having this conversation, is like, I think that is what you see, is people who are like, when people talk about like, don't do a show and just, you know, not care about it. I think that's what you're saying, seeing is people who kind of get it and understand the theory of it, but then just can't translate it to,
So you're saying that's actually evidence of a lack of talent so far. It's like you're talented in terms of charisma and the moment, but you haven't got the chops yet to pull this off in a deeper way.
That's what I'm saying, yes.
Yeah. So you're perceiving it as a lack of passion, but really it's a lack of acumen.
Yeah, you're looking at the show and you're thinking, why are these people just screwing around up there? But really what you're seeing is people who are underdeveloped as performers.
Okay, well, I'm going to say this, mm-hmm. and I'm disagreeing with everything I'm saying at least twice.
Great.
And I live in this state of indecision, I think it is also important, though, to work with the kind of person I'm describing. I think sometimes you have to be willing to take the good and the bad of people. If there are people who are charismatic and interesting and powerful on stage, but they're problematic in some way with discipline, with rehearsals, but they've got something that you don't have, there's something to be said for bathing in it. Like, it's never going to be a long-term thing, and it's not as good as a group who is working together on the same page. It's not as satisfying. But, like, invariably, if you're learning improv and doing, like, a lot of things over years, and you get an experience where you're with somebody who, like, I don't know, has some effect on stage,
yeah,
you will win in the long run if you just kind of enjoy it and experience it and bask in it for a little while as a lesson to be learned for later.
So if this person has something that they're bringing to the stage that does work,
it's not what you said you wanted to bring. It's not the goal. It's not even discipline. But it's something that this person is bringing that other people don't have.
Mm-hmm.
It behooves you to play the hand you're dealt.
Sure.
And to, like, I mean, I'm not just saying for the show. Like, maybe live with it for a little while. And in the long run, you're not gonna, you want to stick with people who want to work with you and do things.
Yeah.
But, like, you can't be super picky. This is the indecision part. Like,
I agree with what you're saying. I agree with the larger kind of thing that you're speaking to, because maybe I'm misperceiving what you're saying, but like, I always think that if there's somebody who isn't quite the greatest that you're either in a class with or on a team with, who's maybe in your own perception lacking something, you know, like it is, I always think it's great to perform and to play with those people. Like,
yeah,
you always get, in a lot of the classes that I've been in, there, you know, there's sometimes you'll get like one or two people who just don't seem to get it. Like, you've got 16 people in a class.
Yeah.
Maybe there's one person who just doesn't get it
right.
at all. And you're wondering, like, how did this person even get into this
right,
class?
Right, right, right.
You'll see, there have been a few classes I've been in where you'll see, like, after a couple of weeks, that person will step out to initiate a scene and nobody
will
step
out
with
them. Right, right, right.
I have always been the person who wants to step out with that person.
Yeah.
Because either I want to make them look good and, like, want to, you know, like, show them that I can help them make a scene work.
Yeah.
Or I want to give myself the challenge of, like, what is this person going to throw at me and how can I make them look good?
Right, right, right.
You know, and to that, that's something that I think is valuable. Because in a group dynamic, the last thing you want to be doing is being like, well, this person or these people aren't that great, so fuck it. I'm not interested. You know, like, you have to be able to look at somebody and say either, what does that person have that I can make work? Or what is it about me that's making me detach from this person?
Yeah. I just think it's frustrating sometimes. Well, I mean, yeah, you're talking about like sort of X factors and like people who are interesting in a way that's troubling, but you can't throw away the fact that they're interesting and that there's something stimulating about them. And I agree with you.
I think it's the way all that stuff challenges the person, the improviser that you are. You know, that's how you have to look at it. Like, you can't just...
What if this? What if the best person in your group is the laziest?
Like, the laziest about making moves or showing up
the practices? Or the art, pushing themselves, trying different things.
Then how do they become the best person in the group? Just by instinct? Just by, like...
I think some people have good instincts. Mm-hmm. I think some people are just funny and charismatic and can get to a certain level without trying.
Well, the person that I think of... I'm just vaguely reminded of by your example.
Yeah.
Is like somebody like Charlie Sanders.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
Who I was in a practice group with.
And right.
I think I was in the practice group that he like showed up at, did a Harold.
Yeah.
Did a hilarious Harold, and then the coach started giving him notes, and he raised his hand and said, "I'm sorry, what's a Harold?" Like he just showed up and was.
He's a good example. Hilarious. I was on a team with Charlie called Team Brooklyn. Mm-hmm. I loved performing, and I was on a Harold team 1985 with Charlie.
Yeah,
loved performing with him, and he has definitely gone through phases in his career where he worked hard, and other times when he wasn't working hard,
mm-hmm.
either because he had other things going on or. But he's always charismatic on stage, and he's always funny.
But the reason that I bring him up is like, as somebody who showed up with a lot of talent,
yeah.
and a lot of passion, but not a lot of could just do it immediately,
yeah.
but then started working towards it.
Well, he also did work very hard, but like
that's what I mean.
There were times. I mean, Team Brooklyn was a group of everybody who lived in Williamsburg was on Harold teams. Kevin Mullaney put us together and had us do shows in Williamsburg, and uh-huh. Charlie and I were two of those people. And that wasn't his Harold team, and Charlie was definitely not interested in working hard on that group. It was like a fun thing,
sure,
it was to have fun. But what you know that team was pretty good, and there was a time I remember when we were talking about maybe we should be working hard. Maybe this ensemble of people should focus more. And I remember Charlie was of the mindset of no, I do not want this to be the place. You know, this is not a thing that I want to invest more time or work into. And I remember being frustrated because I was like, well, you're maybe the best one, or you're definitely one of the stronger ones here. And like, if you don't choose to do that, then we can only go to a certain level. Mm-hmm. Like, you have to be on board, or it's limited.
Right.
But I didn't stop doing Team Brooklyn.
That didn't discourage you from...
I just took it for what it was. Mm-hmm. I set my expectations accordingly. Be like, okay, well, I get to play with a guy that I like a lot and who's hilarious, and it's not going to be the place where I push myself in certain ways or try a thing. I'm just going to let it be what it is and enjoy it for that.
Sure.
And it was a great experience, and I really liked it. And I think that people have things like that where you have to kind of make that decision. Do I just accept this person for what they're going to bring?
Mm-hmm.
Or am I going to, you know, either way is okay. You either have to decide, no, working hard is more important for me, or being around these kind of interesting people is more important to me right now.
Yeah. And, you know, I mean, it's also like I can sit in my ivory tower from where we record this podcast.
Yeah, we have regular performance opportunities, so it's easy for us to be picking and choosing.
And also, you know, if I were on a team with somebody who did not, you know, who I felt was lacking in certain, you know, things that I consider important to making a great improv team.
Yeah.
But we were going out on stage on a regular basis and getting a ton of laughs. I might be like, who cares? I'm getting laughs.
Yeah.
You know, the group that I'm on is getting laughs, yeah. and we're seen as awesome, and people are coming to see us,
it's
and they
easy to just ride
respect
that.
Us, you know. But I've also been on teams where people were hilarious but didn't give a shit about practicing. And were only kind of in it for themselves.
Yeah.
They would step out every scene that they were in, they would step out and just command the stage and just like pull everything towards what they wanted.
Yeah. It's
and
no
it was
fun.
Not satisfying to me.
Well, I guess you got to go with your gut on that. If you're not happy, you're not happy.
Uh huh.
Right now, I wouldn't do something, I think, just for fun.
Right.
I wouldn't do, even if it was working, it's got to be interesting and it's got to be with people who are going to work hard at it.
Yeah.
But I, you know, I just think like it's the talent versus passion thing. Like, some people are going to get farther faster because they're more talented. They won't have to work as hard.
Mm-hmm.
But in the long run, that's an exception. Those people, laziness catches up.
Sure.
They tend to not be around as long.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if you
Sanders did work. I mean, the example we're using, Charlie did work really hard. He was doing stuff nonstop.
Mm-hmm.
More likely, he was doing so many things that a couple of them probably didn't get attention. But, like,
yeah,
it wasn't a lack of effort. So, like, there aren't many people who are just awesome and they're lazy.
Right.
And in the long run, the ones who work hard are the ones who end up sticking around and being great.
Yeah, they at least can stick around. If they're not great right away, they can stick around long enough.
Above a certain minimum level of competence, right?
Like, sure.
You need to be able to.
You have to, yeah, because there's definitely the opposite of people who, you know, there's that situation where people are passionate but not that talented. you know, and they wind up kind of just sticking around in anything. And I'm talking like, you can cite any kind of art. You can cite, you know, novel writers, poets, sculptors, of art. There are people who are like,
but I think by and large in this scene, the persistence wins out. I still stand by it. In terms of students, the ones who like, it doesn't have to be reflected in taking a million classes, but the ones who are around the scene and put the most time in are the ones who end up being the ones who are really good.
Absolutely. I agree with that. If you show up and you're not that great, which nobody is that, most people are not that great when they show up, but then you can persevere and really learn and put yourself in situations where you're going to grow.
In classes, when I'm teaching classes, there will invariably be people who stand out as a bit more comfortable and stronger than other students.
Yeah.
And the students who are less comfortable look to those people as leaders. But the difference between the talent levels is not as great as it seems to the student.
Mm-hmm.
Like whoever's going to put more work in over the year will be the one who is stronger.
Sure.
Yeah.
So now we do you want to talk about art versus passion versus talent versus ability to socialize?
No, because that problem will never be solved. If you're good on stage, you're terrible off stage. That's a hard and fast rule that is never broken.
That's right.
Yeah. So that's probably enough.
I think
this week. Jesus, we talk. Is anybody listening now?
No, everybody has tuned us down. Everybody's back to listening to All Things Considered.
Oh wow, I'm so behind. I've got a collection of those. All right, so that's it for this week's podcast then. So we want to thank Andre Vermillion and Jim Santangeli for coming by.
Mm-hmm.
We want to remind you again to go see shows this week at the theater.
That's right.
I'm Uncomfortable and the Get Psyched show and Prison Freaks and Andre's show French Toast.
Yes. And if you have questions or comments or want to suggest something for Will and I to talk about on this podcast or just want to tell us how wrong we are.
Yeah.
Or how generally milk toast our opinions are about
things. Yes, how we qualify them into nothing. That's my job.
And then go back and forth about our own opinions.
Yes.
You can now email us at ucbtnypodcast@gmail.com. That's ucbtnypodcast@gmail.com.
Okay, well, thanks very much, and we'll see you next week.
See you next week.